Welcome to the Every Movie Ever Podcast. My name is Ben Groves.
And my name is Rob McFarlane. Welcome to the show, a movie podcast where we ask the important questions like, when we yawn, do deaf people think we are screaming?
That's so stupid. But okay.
This is a censored version of the show, guys. Swears will be bleeped, but fear not, dear listener. As always, the full uncensored version is available early on our Patreon for as little as £1.
It's a quid, and the link to that is wherever you hit play. So just go back to there, look at where you hit play, look below, there's a little link, and there's more of us. Yeah. There's more of this.
There's more of that. You get some stuff. There's stuff on there. There's plenty on there. Don't be greedy. How you doing today, buddy? Feel that.
Well, buddy, the horrors persist, but I remain silly. I'm going to refuse to give the correct reaction to the way things are going at the moment. I feel like life can sometimes be a bully, and I feel like there are people in my life and there are situations in my life that are prodding me, trying to get a reaction. And I'm just going to stay upbeat. I'm going to stay positive. I'm just keep on trucking. And fuck all you're trying to get me frowning. Do you know what? Whatever happens, I'm going to stay silly, and eventually life will move on when it realizes it can't get a rise out of me. How about you, bud?
Shit. What are we doing today, buddy?
All right. Today, buddy, we are doing The Princess Bride, Rob Reiner's 1987 cult classic that flopped at the box office, but has gone on to become one of the most beloved fantasy comedies of all time.
And we're answering all the hard questions. Is this just Monty Python for Americans?
Without nostalgia-tinted glasses, does this film hold up?
No.
How dare you? And most importantly,
why is this film still loved after so many years after its initial failure at the box office? That is a question I would also like to know the answer to. I feel like I know, but I would like to hear it from someone who's seen this before.
Before we get into our thoughts and feelings about this film, because I know you've got very strong ones and I've got very strong ones and they're not necessarily aligned. Not everybody's seen this film recently. I mean, everybody's seen this, right? Right, dear listener? You've definitely seen this film, right, dear listener? If you haven't, we're about to spoil it. But I thought it's your turn to read the breakdown, and we've had a bit of a good run of them lately. We've got room to play. I thought I'd write a breakdown of what happens in The Princess Bride that's very plot accurate.
Oh, you're a dick. I've just read the first sentence.
I thought we've got some time. You know?
Yeah. Sick.
You had a few stumbles in the last couple of episodes. And so welcome to the Elocution Dojo, my friend.
Sure. Appreciate it.
Welcome to my dungeon of traps.
Yeah.
This is the fire swamp for a dyslexic.
Yeah, sick. Love this. Super glad that I showed up to record it today.
So Ben, could you please remind the listeners who haven't seen this film in a while, exactly what happens from the first scene all the way to the last scene.
I got you.
In Rob Reiner's The Princess Bride.
You ready?
Yeah.
Watch me do this effortlessly.
Hey!
There you go, buddy.
Round one, mate. There's one demon slayed.
First try. Easy. Buttercup, a barn-born beauty, loves loyal, lowly Wesley. You're a dick for this. But when he vanishes at sea, she's forced to wed wicked Prince Humperdinck.
Yeah.
Before the bells bring their binding by marriage. She's nabbed by a nimble-knifed Spaniard named Inigo. A boastful brainiac and a boulder-bashing brute called Fezzik.
Dude, I'm so proud. You're nailing this.
This is horrid. But a black masked mystery man bests them all, revealing himself as Wesley, wonderfully well and wildly wily.
Oh my God, Ben! Welcome to the first.
Who wrote this?
Safe zone. You made it. You nailed that.
Yeah,
you nailed that.
Checkpoint one. This sounds like it was written by a nonce in the 1840s. It's ridiculous. Hateful and heartless Humperdinck hauls Wesley to a horrid torture trap, leaving Buttercup bound to a bogus betrothal.
Because
people talk like this. But the Spaniard, Inigo. What's his name?
Inigo. Yes, player choice.
Inigo Montoya.
There you go.
Inigo Montoya. I can't do it without the accent. But the Spaniard, Inigo, seeking sword, clashing vengeance, and Fezzik, the big, bold brute, bring Wesley back with a boost from Miracle Max, the Miracle Man. Though weak and wobbly, Wesley works wonders, tricking and toppling the tyrant's troops to triumph.
Hey.
Hate this.
But now we're at checkpoint Hate two, this. And I've noticed what you're doing is you're kind of speedrunning it, right?
Yeah.
You need to slow it down a bit. Let the listener really
I'm leaning into it, buddy. This is my fuck it era. I'm in for a penny, in for a pound.
Okay.
With wit, willpower, and wild sword swings, Wesley, Buttercup, and their bold buddies battle their way to freedom. The Spaniard, Inigo, slashes his sworn foe. The prince is put in his place, and the lovers leave laughing into the moonlit mist.
Bud, foe vanquished.
That was kind of poetic. That was nice. That, I like that.
There you go.
Clunky start, but I feel like I stuck the landing. I am
fizzing with pride.
We're getting there.
That was fantastic work.
That was quite nice, right?
That was effortless.
The first one, I was like, I hate you. Effortless.
Yeah. How did you achieve that last paragraph?
No clue, buddy.
Okay. Just
sheer.
I was going to say effortless willpower, but you know.
Yeah, no.
You can't.
No, I know. I saw your trap. I sidestepped.
Let's see. Okay, yeah. Before we did the fun breakdown.
Yeah.
We've got some wildly varying opinions on this film.
Okay, we do. But I feel like I need to defend mine.
Yeah. Yeah, you do.
I have thought for many years that I've seen this film. And in the back of my head, I was like, yeah, fun film. Saw it when I was, you know, younger. And it was cool. I have little flashbacks of this film.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched it and I was like, I have no memory of anything that is happening right now. And the memories I do have of this film aren't in this film.
Right.
So I'm thinking of a different film completely.
Right.
And I'm not sure what film it is. We spoke about this the other day.
Yes.
And we said it was...
The Fisher King,
yeah.
With Robin Williams.
Yes. I watched that last night.
Great
it's
film,
not The
huh?
Fisher King.
It's not The Fisher King.
But I'm not thinking of The Fisher King. I can't put a finger on what film I'm thinking of.
Okay, can we maybe describe what film you're thinking of to the listener so that we can get some really, okay. really bad suggestions?
Okay, so I have a distinct memory of a guy and a girl in sort of stereotypical prince, princess attire... underground in what I'm assuming and have always assumed is New York City.
Right.
And they come up through like a manhole cover.
Right.
That's the only bit of the film that I remember. But in my mind, I was like, yeah, Princess Bride, they're underground, under New York.
Is it?
And everyone that I've said this to is like, is it Enchanted?
Right.
And it's not Enchanted because I've double checked.
Just a quick, this struck me just as you were mentioning it there. Because I was like, Princess under New York. We agreed it wasn't Super Mario Brothers movie.
No, it's not. I watch that on a semi-regular basis.
But only just now when you were talking, did I think, is it Black Knight with Martin Lawrence?
Maybe.
Because I'm thinking that's
I've just Googled Black Knight and it's all Fortnite. What am I doing? All right, one sec. Oh, maybe. I need to watch it.
Okay,
but maybe.
So you thought you were going to sit down to watch Martin Lawrence.
I don't remember it being Martin Lawrence.
Okay.
But I remember it being underground in New York. I thought I was watching this film that I saw.
Because I can see Cary Elwes being a disappointment.
No, not at all.
A disappointment. Just a shock when you're expecting to see Martin Lawrence and then Cary Elwes turns
it
up.
It was different.
Right.
So I started watching and I was like, oh, this is...
Right.
I don't remember this bit. Maybe it sort of gets more familiar as the film goes on. And it didn't.
Okay.
And I think watching this for the first time in 2025, it was a delight. It was very lovely. The storytelling was incredible. It's a very well-made film.
Right.
It's very, very well done.
I can sense a butt coming, and as always, everything that happens before you touch the butt is invalid once you have.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just not for me, is it?
Okay.
It's a soppy fantasy period royalty Nancy Bollock kind of.
Okay.
Aww.
I'm gonna.
It's a kissing book, and I'm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Fred Savage. So.
Yeah.
I first watched this as a kid. It was a family favorite that would get trotted out once a year,
mm-hmm.
and I remember I watched it at a young enough age that the first time I watched it, none of the irony, none of the humor, none of the light ribbing that it gives the genre. Hit because it was.
Was the humor in inverted brackets then? I just needed to double check.
Look, I respect your opinion, all right?
I'm respecting yours. Yeah. I'm respecting yours. I'm just making sure we're talking correctly.
so I just took it as a straight fairy tale.
Okay.
And I was like, mint.
Yeah, yeah.
And then as I aged with it and I began to see more and more of the comedy in the film.
Yeah.
And I began to see more and more of the kind of irony in the film.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's one of my all-time favorites.
Okay.
Probably one of my favorite fantasy films. Top three, easy.
Oh, I can see that. I can see that.
No, because you're going to make that offensive. I can see it in your eyes already.
No, no, no,
you're
I'm not. Like, I'm not. This isn't... Okay,
I can
look.
See that this is in your top three because this is a film made exclusively for nonsense, Rob.
No.
That's how that's going to come back later.
This right. is genuinely right. This is me saying at the top of the us getting into the show, I'm...
Mm-hmm.
It's not my film.
Right.
But that...
Why?
It's not my film for many reasons, but this whole thing isn't about whether or not it's my film or not. It's about... All I've done is I've gone in and I've taken away from it what I can.
Right, okay.
And what I've taken away from it is just a mess of wonderful, magical elements that are just insane to think that this film came out in the 80s. It's a
right.
absolute monster of a film. Incredible.
It is.
Is it my cup of tea? Not even a little bit.
But when we spoke about why not, you said because it's fantasy.
I struggle with fantasy.
Right. Well, yeah, you struggle with fantasy. Like, you've always been very open about how much you hate Magic the Gathering.
Despise it.
How you've never played Dungeons and Dragons.
Never. Despise it.
You don't like the games Monster Hunter. You've not completed the most recent one.
Within 40 hours.
And you're not fond of the Final Fantasy games. You're like...
I went through 16 earlier. But this is what I'm saying. Right. So I like fantasy stuff, right? I love Dungeons and Dragons.
Right.
I love Magic the Gathering. I'm obsessed with Final Fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm obsessed with, like, yeah. you know, these sort of big, vivid games. I love this stuff.
Right.
Dungeons & Dragons is probably my favorite. I'm in a campaign right now. Adam Smart of Control Alt Critique is the DM. It's incredible.
Nice.
The difference is when I'm engaging in that side of fantasy stuff, I have an active mm-hmm. part of it. It's not...
Right.
It's not someone going, and woefully... The princess glanced up at a period-dressed, well-spoken, poor farm boy who she fell head over right. heels in love with. I'm like, no, it's not. It's more sort of like, you're a copper dragonborn that can spew acid.
Right. So what I'm hearing is not that you dislike fantasy. It's that you mm-hmm. never read a book or had books read to you as a child, and therefore you don't have that connection to childhood storytelling that this is.
No, I did. This is the main thing I took away from the film. I love the power of storytelling in this. Like, the entire film
right.
is framed around... a grandfather
right.
telling a story to his sick grandson, which is the most beautiful thing I've seen. This whole narrative device that's used to show uh-huh. how stories connect generations, they
right.
teach life lessons, and it offers comfort in like a time
right.
of need.
So, but is there not a part of you that remembers having stories read to you?
Oh, 1,000%, buddy.
Because why would you go back and revisit the memories and question the logic of the stories you were told?
Of course not.
Right?
Yeah.
For me, this is as I grew up with it, It pointed out mm-hmm. how silly and how nonsensical
mm-hmm.
and how bound by sort of invisible rules those stories were that I hadn't realized when I was 8 and having them read to me.
100%.
I only realized when watching this.
So when I was a kid, my mom used to read me stories.
Right.
And it was my favorite time.
And then after that, straight in the mind.
You know what I mean? Straight down to getting that coal. But it was like... So I used to do that. But then it also reminds me of like some of my favorite childhood memories of hanging out with my granddad, which was like incredible. I really miss those days. So this film reminded me of that. It was awesome. It was a great little sort of like look back. But I think where I'm at now and how many times I've tried to give fantasy a go, it always sort of leaves a sour taste in my mouth because it's never quite... Lord of the Rings, for example.
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings, the animated... films from the 70s. You got the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit. Those two films there.
Yeah, yeah, the Ralph Bakshi ones.
Because they are incredible. There's tons of weird like rotoscoping stuff going on. There's live elements mixed into the trippiest cartoons you've ever seen. They're incredible.
There's a sinister undercurrent to those.
Oh,
though.
Dude, but that's what I love about fantasy because it is, you do have this sort of like, it's not all up.
Right.
It's not all uphill. And even the negative in Princess Bride mm-hmm. seems like a nice quirky up.
100%. This Princess Bride fantasy is children's storybook fantasy.
Yeah, which is great.
We're in Cinderella, we're in Sleeping Beauty. We're not in Silmarillion and Necroscope and like, you know, we're not in Fourth Wing. We're in...
I get it. But then it's all just soft. The Lord of the Rings movies are soft.
Yes.
It's a fucking long walk that's ruined with nonsensical story. It's a cookbook that was made into a film, and it's the most annoying way to spend 3 hours I've ever spent. I'm desperate for us to do Lord of the Rings because everyone, it's where I get cancelled.
Right, okay.
Because of my opinions on that film.
Yeah, yeah.
This is like a much watered down version of that. It's very soft, it's very gentle, it's very delicate, but it kind of encompasses everything that I can't get my head around.
Right.
Period drama, mm-hmm. posh English actors, and just fucking over the top romance nonsense.
Okay.
It's just not, it's not it's my a kissing cup of tea,
book.
Man.
It's too a kissing
soft.
Book.
It's a kissing book.
Right.
It's too soft.
Okay.
How about, what about with you though? Like, what is it about this sort of soft, flaccid fantasy stuff that kind of gets your dick hard?
It comes back to what I was saying about the never having had reason to question the rules of a fairy tale before.
Okay.
Right? So there was lots of when I, you know, in the stories that I grew up on, and we all grew up on.
Yeah.
With Cinderella and Prince Charming and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. When Shrek came around, the DreamWorks animation, I need to contextualize Shrek. Everyone knows what Shrek is.
It had its own CRT TV, buddy. Like, everyone knows. You know what I mean?
So everyone kind of credits that as the sort of pulling back of the curtain of fantasy. Like, oh, isn't this silly? He's Prince Charming, but why would he be charming? Actually, he's a bit of a sleaze and all that kind of stuff. Is predated by 10 years by this film.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why Shrek gets applause where this gets... your not hatred, but your just doesn't connect with you where Shrek does, yeah, right? Just
indifference, I guess.
Right, okay.
But Shrek doesn't connect to me. I don't connect with Shrek.
Shrek's your favorite.
It's the exact same indifference. I'm like, yeah, great.
You're literally wearing a Shrek t-shirt right now.
Jay and Silent Bob kissing.
Oh, okay. It looks like Shrek from a distance. I'm sorry.
There's Snoochie Boochie's inequality.
Oh, I thought it was...
Bigot.
To be fair, I can't see the t-shirt. I'm just slandering you.
Oh, you're wearing a gay t-shirt. Must be a cartoon monster. Idiot.
Well, yes, Ben, because the fear of homosexuality is in itself a cartoon monster invented by the far right. Yeah.
Oh my God, something just clicked in my brain. This has all to do with Shrek, I'm sorry.
No, good.
But the fantasy that I enjoy, Magic the Gathering.
Yeah.
I love Magic the Gathering because a group of friends get together and you can do cool stuff by ruining someone's day.
Right, okay, yeah.
I've got one deck that's just a monstrosity. You can wipe all of the creatures at any time.
Right.
So people can spend 12 turns. If there's five people playing, that's a long time.
Yeah,
I can just go, blup, all creatures gone.
Right, okay.
And then I've got another card in there. Blup, all lands gone. So now you can't do anything. All the game restarts. That's ruining people's days.
There's an element of cruelty that you enjoy about the fantasy that you engage in. And because this lacks any cruelty whatsoever, you can't connect to
cruelty?
It.
I think it's like a cathartic release.
Right,
I think
okay.
You get to do stuff that you wouldn't normally do as like a normal person.
Right, okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Like cruelty.
Like I wouldn't go out of my way to to ruin someone's day.
Right, okay.
But if I get the opportunity to, as like a lighthearted jab, like a hey, isn't right. that funny?
Okay.
1000% I'm jumping at that.
Okay, yeah. 1000%. Fair. One of the things you did that ruined my day was asked why I enjoyed this kind of Monty Python humor.
Yeah, it is Monty Python nonsense. It's just
it is not Monty Python.
It's posh humor. It's what witty posh schoolboys are like.
No.
Where did you get your first laugh, Rob? How long into the film?
A couple minutes in where she asks him
posh. When she asks him what?
She asks him to pass her a pitcher of water.
Oh my God, I knew it was going to be something stupid like
that
this.
That was amazingly within reach. And Carrie Elwes gives the most intense, fully commits to the bit, intense, romantic, sexual stare as he reaches for a jug that she could have picked up herself.
Hilarious.
And they play it like some incredible love scene.
Incredible. That is... posh comedy. That's pure posh comedy.
What is with the chip on the shoulder coming out again? What is with this?
Do you know, it's,
oh,
it's
do you so, know what? They didn't play do... a Princess Bride down in the mines when I was chipping ice off my kneecaps.
I'm a little bit upset that it's not the film I was thinking about. There was no...
That's
I
what
I
it
might
is.
Be thinking of Chud, to be honest with you. Like,
right.
I'm not even sure if it's got anything to do with princesses.
Right. There's just...
But anyway...
There weren't enough working class blokes slapping up birds... It's not my kind of comedy.
It's all just, you know,
felt excluded because it meant I had to have read a book. We could both play this game, Ben, all right? But it's not going to get us anywhere.
Hear me out. You know the whole, you know, when you go to a bar,
right?
There's those two old guys at the end of the bar and they've had one too many and they think they're hilarious.
Right.
And it's the sort of guy that when they're sitting in a restaurant. Someone mm-hmm. brings over the card machine. They pretend it's a phone. Hello? Yeah, don't worry. Yeah, I got this. Hello? Yeah. That yeah. kind of fucking humor. And you're just sitting there like, oh my God, get hit by a car.
That's where I really disagree, because I also hate that comedy. I think the big difference between what you're talking about and Monty Python, mm-hmm. But the big difference between what you're talking about, Monty Python, and all that kind of comedy that I also hate, mm-hmm. and this,
yeah.
is the element of love. It's the power of love, Ben.
Right.
That's the big difference, right?
Okay.
Carrie Elwes has read all the books as a child. He loved this book. He really enjoyed the characters.
He did.
Rob Reiner, the same. He was a big fan of the writer. Chris Sarandon, he's quoted as saying, "We approached it as a sincere fairy tale, but with a wink, acknowledging the cliches while celebrating them."
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I think the cast and crew members adore this genre. Mm-hmm. They grew up with these kinds of stories, and they're indulging in their love of the format
yeah.
and the love of the cliche. And they're not, what they're not doing at any point is pointing and laughing like they're somehow more clever. Whereas Monty Python is ridicule. It's
okay.
Isn't the Bible a bunch of nonsense because this doesn't work? Isn't Arthurian legend nonsense? Aren't we clever for pointing out the flaws in a 2,000-year-old book? Ah ha ha. What yeah, idiot would believe in this? It's somebody going, I actually really love this. This is really special to me. This is really dear to me. And okay, this is a bit silly.
But it is quite silly. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Okay, I see.
And
there is a difference.
The two guys in the bar there will make mm-hmm. that joke at the server's expense, at the barkeep's expense. They don't mind as long as they're having a laugh and as long as they look cool.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Whereas this is like they want everyone to be involved because they love this and they want you to love it too. Because despite the fact that it's poking fun at love stories, mm-hmm. it's a really cute love story.
Very sweet.
Despite the fact it's pointing fun at swashbuckling adventures, mm-hmm. it's got mint sword fights in it that took months to achieve.
I mean, yeah, I've got no point of reference for what a mint fencing match is. You know what I mean? Honestly, it's probably the first time I've seen fencing. I'm like, it's fine.
Right.
Sticks.
Two blokes fighting with swords is too posh for Ben.
No,
because they're not beating each other to death with their gyros.
That's what I mean. Right? Lose a limb. Right. Spill some blood. Right. Let's get weird with it.
But so you see, when you bring a film like Wet Hot American Summer.
Yes.
And you love 80s B movies, like summer camp movies, and you've seen loads.
I had a feeling that this was coming.
And yeah. I go, yeah, it's fine. It's just, it's aggressively unfunny.
Okay.
The shoe, meet the other foot.
No, this is nice. I like this.
Okay. I have a sense of understanding that we come from different worlds. Like different worlds right. Andre the Giant is in this movie.
He is.
For the benefit of the listeners who don't know who Andre the Giant is, who is he to you? Because I think to you, Andre the Giant is a wrestler.
He is. He was the sort of towering monster dude from wrestling when we were kids, but he was also one of the loveliest fellas around.
Yeah.
Like ever.
Yeah.
So when we were kids, obviously me and my two neighbors, we used to beat the shit out of each other. We'd watch Mortal Kombat and one of us would end up in hospital.
Right.
We'd watch
just working class stuff, you know, just before you go down the mines.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Say this, we used to get into so much fun. I got trapped in a drain once because of those guys. It's right. Why I'm also scared of drains.
Right, okay. I thought it was it.
You know what I mean? That's not real, Rob.
Also, you were too poor to have balloons. What would it take down the drain that you would want back?
What, you're going to steal my paper boat? Because yeah. I've got money for origami lessons, you right. fucking idiot.
Right, exactly. You're the only person I know that would class shame it.
Yeah.
You just go, you go Pennywise. Oh, what?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Like, I can afford paper. You think I know how to spell? All right.
It's a semi-deflated, half-chewed dog ball. Too good for you. Fine, I'll take my business elsewhere, you clown.
Right, exactly. Oh, nice, nice.
Yeah, but Andre the Giant. So we used to watch wrestling. We used to get these like little bootleg wrestling
yeah.
video tapes that were like filmed on some guy at school's TV, and then they'd like make the rounds.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was great. Andre the Giant was just this hulking mess of a man. He was just huge. And his hands were like the size of a skull.
Right. So ridiculous. I've got a point on his hands because I don't know him as a wrestler. I know him as mm-hmm. Fezzik, the giant from The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
Pretty much the only place I know him from. Mm-hmm. And I know you're nonplussed about the the way this film makes you feel. It doesn't make you feel warm. It doesn't give you the nostalgia hit.
That's not true.
It doesn't make you feel like you're tucked in.
There are elements of this film that I really, really enjoyed. There's two elements that I loved.
Okay.
That I'll get into. I'm being a little bit negative. I'm doing devil's advocate. It's fine.
No, I get that.
I've got the whole
I want to see if I can make you love this film because of the way it made Andre the Giant feel.
Hit me with it.
So he had a load of surgeries on his back because he had acromegaly. Yep. He had a spine
issue.
Did
you diagnose him? Oh, Jesus Christ. It sounded like you just spoke doctor's handwriting.
I did, yeah, 100%.
Scribble.
He wasn't the first choice for the film. I can't tell you the first choice is because it comes up in the quiz later.
Okay, well, that's convenient.
But he had a match in Tokyo for the World Wrestling Federation. It was going to pay him $5 million. Mm-hmm. Eventually, it fell through. He managed to get on set.
Awesome.
And Cariel was talking about chatting with Andre, and Andre said, "We big people don't live long." He had that thing that you come across with people who are terminally ill, where they have a secret that most of us don't get. They understand that life is precious and you have to cherish every moment. He was so filled with life and fun and so sweet, such a truly gentle soul. Christopher Guest, and this is what brought me onto it, said that he would go out of his way every morning to try and shake Andre the Giant's hand. Because he was just addicted to the feeling of his hand disappearing inside five catcher's mitts.
That's a fist in fetish being birthed right there. That's a dangerous line to walk.
And Robin Wright, who played Buttercup, talks about the big dinners they'd have, the whole cast, their whole families. They were all sort of together as a group because they were filming for some time. And Andre would drink a case of bourbon just to get tipsy. Mm-hmm. He was in physical pain all the time.
Yeah.
But when she got cold on some of the external sets, he would put one of his hands over her head.
Yeah.
It would completely cover the top of her head to keep her warm.
That's amazing. Not only was he a lovely, charming, gentle giant, he was also a warm hat.
He was a warm hat of a man, right?
You know what I mean?
Both literally and figuratively to the people around him, he was a warm hat of a man. And when they got towards the end of filming, he was asked if he'd enjoyed his time on set. And he said, "I've absolutely loved being here. It's been one of my favorite times in my life because the entire time I've been on set, no one has stared at me and no one has looked at me like a freak. They've just accepted me as a fellow member of the cast."
Fucking love that.
So this film was where Andre the Giant was able to feel like he was a normal-sized person just getting along with his normal-sized friends.
I love that so much. That's so lovely. He's such a sweetheart.
Right.
You know that he was 7'4" tall?
Yeah. Huge.
So he was enormous, which meant that he couldn't fit in cars or anything like this. He used to have to kit out special vans to make it seem like a little lounge in the back of a van.
Yeah.
And that's how he'd get about. So he'd be on set one day and be sort of like, "You guys, this is amazing. You've made me feel completely normal sized.
Yeah.
And this is incredible. Thank you so much." Whilst backing into an enormous long wheelbase transit van that's decked out to look like a living room. And I'm like,
One more than that. To get around sets, they got him an ATV, an all terrain vehicle, right?
Amazing.
Because walking was difficult and he was huge.
Yeah, of course.
So they got him an ATV and Cary Elwes was like, it looked like he was one of the kids from The Shining. He was just massive on this tiny, tiny bike. And he used to come up at like incredible speed, handbrake next to me and be like, "Hey, boss, you like my toy? Do you want to have a go on my toy?" And he did this for days and days and days and days, right?
Okay.
Until eventually Cary Elwes was like, "Fine, I'll have a go on your ATV." Because Andre the Giant would not let it go. And he's like, "You're going to love it. It's mint." And then Cary Elwes tells the story. He says, so Andre the Giant's bodyguard...
Why the fuck would he need a bodyguard? It's if you're going to get someone bigger than Andre the Giant.
My question is, what's that guy paid to do?
That's the easiest job in the world, that is.
That's the easiest job on the planet.
Yeah.
I don't think there's an easier job. What's your job? Oh, I protect Andre the Giant. All right, cool. By doing what? Telling him it's home time?
Let's do it right now. I'm Andre the Giant's bodyguard. Right, you ready?
Yes.
Ask me what I do for a living.
Hello, mate. Well, nice to see you in the pub.
Hey, man. Good to see you, too. Yeah. It's been a long time. How you been?
Busy. Rushed off my feet, mate. My job is incredibly stressful, and the just the sheer weight of responsibility of the people that rely on me to make sure I don't fuck up every day.
Oh God, yeah, tell me about it.
I've got to be honest, it's crushing me and my ability to smile.
Yeah, man.
What about you, bud? What do you do for a living?
Oh, same, mate. Honestly, I'm a... Do you know Andre the Giant?
I do,
The famous wrestler.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
7'4", built like a literal house.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, I'm his bodyguard, mate. I'm the one that keeps that gentle giant safe.
Right. And that's the end of the conversation because I just punch you in the mouth.
Joke's on you. Andre the Giant is my bodyguard.
Right.
Easiest job ever. There you go. You get the shit kicked out of you by a gentle giant. One slap and you are 3 feet into the bar. You know what I mean? You're gone.
Speaking of that ATV though, Cary Elwes did get on it and then did about 30 seconds later go over a small rock, which he put his toe between the rock and the brake pedal of the ATV.
That's smart.
And snapped his toe off.
Yeah, that's just good movie making right there. That is
in the middle of filming. So if you notice, he walks with a limp for a fair bit of the film.
He does.
Covered, fortunately, by the fact that he's been recently... reanimated from the dead, so they can kind of be like, oh, he's a bit stiff.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you notice, when he's on top of the Moor Hill, just before he and Buttercup get into the fire swamp,
yes,
he is sitting with his leg fully extended because that's all his leg can do because his foot is strapped up.
I actually love that. That's amazing. Okay, that's almost as good as Swayze's skateboarding accident on Point Break.
What happened to your foot, Cary? Well, I got bullied by Andre the Giant for 4 straight days into trying his ATV and immediately snapped my toe off. Which is he had many injuries. He got knocked out by Christopher Guest as well.
On purpose? Or
The scene where Christopher Guest hits him with the butt of a sword.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Christopher Guest just literally connected the butt of the sword to his head, knocked him unconscious.
Fucking hell, man. Okay. I mean, he's had a rough run. Okay. I've been a little bit negative up until now, right?
I'm warming you up. You're having a hard week.
I'm sorry.
You were going to watch Black Knight with Martin Lawrence. I can understand where this confusion
comes from. I
thought I was
going to see some people under New York City coming up through a drain hole. And I thought that little mystery in the back of my head would be answered. Turns out it's just opened a whole other can of worms and now I'm overthinking everything. Questioning every other memory I've got. Have you seen this film? Yeah, it's mint. This happens. But does it?
Right. Does Jaws have a shark in it?
But does it?
Or is it a spin-off movie from a Bond film?
You know what I mean? Who knows? So I've been pretty negative. I don't mean to be because I watched this film and it's an incredible film.
Uh-huh.
Like the story writing is amazing, like genuinely amazing. You've got like the screenwriter, William Goldman, is the author of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that he stuck to the project and wouldn't give it to anyone else is he says that if he's the screenwriter and he's the one that's commission it to be made into a movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Only he can fuck it up.
Oh, that's a great attitude. I didn't know that.
Incredible attitudes. So it's like,
oh, nice.
I can respect that massively. And he did an amazing job turning a book into the screenplay because the way that he did it is genius. The whole grandfather to the grandson thing, that's probably the most gorgeous bit of filmmaking I've seen in a very, very, very long time.
And Peter Falk as well. Come on. Come on, Columbo.
Dude, just one more question. You know what I mean? Like, it was incredible. That aspect of the film, the sick grandson and then the grandfather taking an entire day out just to read him a book and make sure he's feeling a little better.
Yeah, Christmas.
And you can come back tomorrow, you can do this and it's fine. Dude, that warmed my cold, tiny, broken heart. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
My little ticker grew 3 sizes.
You needed that this week. This is why I thought you were gonna be all over this.
I did need this film. No, I needed this film. I didn't connect with it as well as I thought. We've been into it, but it's fine. But the film did make my week better. There's also 2 other points in this film that really sort of ticked the boxes for me.
Okay.
And it's Inigo Montoya.
Oh, what a guy.
This guy, right, I didn't realize that he was going to have the effect that he did. This guy is so focused on his revenge mission.
Mm-hmm.
He literally goes through hell and high water. He works endless jobs. He does criminal stuff. He kidnaps people.
Yeah.
He trains to be the best swordsman that he can possibly be. Not in the world, just what's best for him. And he's like, I'm going to max out my sword skills right now. And he does this for his entire life.
The bit that made me really connect with him is one of his first lines where he said, I'm searching for the man who killed my father. Mm-hmm. It's been 20 years and I'm starting to lose confidence.
Yeah, it's incredible.
That sort of... Oh, yeah. Yes.
You see what I mean? That dedication.
Beginning to feel a little bit insecure.
For anything other than taking drugs, I'd be so successful. But instead, I'm just nearly 4 years sober. You know what I mean? Like, it's ridiculous.
Quit even but, that.
So he dedicates all this time to being the best that he possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
There's a moment towards the end of the film where he completes what he's set out to do for all these years.
Mm-hmm.
And he has this really sobering moment where he's like, what do I do now? I don't know who I am or what I do outside of this situation. And fucking hell, did that hit me hard? Because I was like, that really cut straight to the center there, you Spanish bastard.
What you need to find is you need to find something that you are as excited about as Rob Reiner is about Little People.
I don't know what that could be, man. Do you know what I mean? Cocaine filled it for a bit.
Yeah.
Music filled it for a bit. Playing drums for a bit.
Let me put it this way. Rob Reiner, when in the making of documentary that's on the DVD of this film, he's a relatively calm, measured New York Jewish fella, right? And he speaks pretty dryly until you ask him about the rodents of unusual size.
Mm-hmm.
And then it cuts to him with the most animated I've ever seen his face, where he just goes, they were little people. They were little people that we put in suits. And there was one that was really good at the fighting, and there was another one that was really good at like the crawling around, and then we got all the shots of the one that was good at crawling around, and then we came to do the fight scene, and the guy Danny Blackner, he was late, couldn't turn up, and basically he got pulled over for speeding the night before on his way home from the pub, ended up in jail, and the police officer didn't believe that he had to get to set because he was playing a giant rat.
That's fucking hero status. That is like, that's top tier.
My argument is, if you're not going to be the little man in the rat costume, you got to find something that gets you as animated as Rob Reiner does about the man in the rat costume.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. I'm trying. I'll find something someday. But until because
I'll get you a little person dressed as a rat if that's what it takes, bro.
I think it will, to be honest, mate. I don't know what will. I feel like
it's exciting though. We get to find out.
Yeah, ice cream maybe. I wouldn't mind a bit of ice cream. I'm gonna go get some ice cream after this. It's gonna be good.
Get some ice cream because you don't have to get the vegan Cornetto mint ones anymore like you used to when we started the show.
Nah, fuck that. You know what I mean? No more wet. Sort of. It's not really ice cream because you can let it warm up and it doesn't really melt.
No.
It doesn't do anything. No, it's go anywhere. It's kind of just spongy.
Stabilized coconut milk.
Yeah, it's coconut rank. But my other part of this film that I adored more than anything and that I wish I saw more of in films is you're right in saying that it pokes fun at the fairy tale stuff that it's sort of paying homage to at the same time. And I love that fact.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the what it takes to be a hero.
Right.
And every single person in this film, regardless of whether they're good, bad, bad turned good,
mm-hmm.
good turned bad, everyone is a hero in their own little sub-story.
Yes.
And it all equates to sort of this weird self-belief.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the true power of you.
Yeah.
That can really sell this thing. And I think that's a great message to say. If kids are watching this as like a nice family-friendly fun movie.
As I did.
What a great message to send out to kids.
100%.
What an incredibly powerful, incredibly important message that we can send out to families on like in the goofiest movie ever.
It's goofy. And that's the thing. Dude. It's so goofy. I get it didn't connect with you. But I don't know how you can hate this film because it's so
goofy.
I know you don't. I'm saying I don't know how anyone could because it's...
Oh, okay, yeah. I thought you said me. I
was using like the figurative, like how one could hate this movie.
No, I got you.
Because it's so goofy and it's so wholesome and it's so just minding its own business. It's one of those things, if you don't like it, turn it off. But like when people are like, I've yet to meet somebody who says they hate The Princess Bride because it's just harmless and... Every single person in this film is trying their best to do what they've decided they want to do. The six-fingered man, Count Rugen, he's decided he wants to be an absolute twat. And he's putting work into it.
Mate, he's doing it. He's doing the best.
He's on the hustle. He's on the grind.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Regardless of what's happening in the ceremony, marriage is what brings us together. I fucking hate that guy so much. Dude, that marriage. And then I was like, this is going to be one of those stupid quotable lines that those two dickheads in the pub are going to sit there and just bang out loud as chips, just being sort of like, you know what I mean?
Based on the real priest that William Goldman had to sit through a wedding by.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I'd divorce immediately. I'd be like, you know what? I can't. This is a sign.
Yeah, but you know those times where you can't laugh, it just gets funnier. Like my sister and I went to go see Buddhist monks. They were from Tibet. They were on a tour.
What?
And the only reason we got tickets to see them is because they were doing the songs and rituals of their peoples. But the advert said that they had brought from Tibet a flute made out of a human thigh bone.
Right.
And we were like, I want to go see what a human thigh bone sounds like.
Okay.
And we get in there and there's a very earnest, very sincere, very middle class white guy who spent far too long in India being like, you should all be very honored today because these elderly gentlemen have come all the way from Tibet to play you their songs and show you their most sacred rituals in exchange for a bit of money to help them fight the Chinese Communist Party oppression. I'm like, oh, okay, this is serious.
Then
he introduced them and the silence. And then these incredible, like I'd say 12 incredibly elderly men came out with what I can only describe as tea cozies on their heads, did a little shuffle dance, and then sat down in front of like horns, like trumpets, that were like 12 foot long. Right. They were as long as the stage.
Okay.
There's a big in-breath, a big reverent moment, and then they blew into them. And the sound was verbatim.
Right.
On like loud. So Isabella and I, my sister, just start absolutely wetting ourselves. And then they stop, leaving the only sound being us laughing.
Right.
At which point the incredibly sincere, earnest white guy starts frowning at us, which makes it even funnier. Yeah. This goes on. And every time they go, now this is our holiest and most sacred ritual. And we've got the thigh bone of the founder of the... And they bring it out and it's this little fucking white flute. It's about 6 inches long. And I shit you not, the sound it made was... And that was us done. That was us gone.
Amazing.
And the fact that we weren't allowed to laugh made it so much funnier.
Okay. I like that. I was going to take the piss out of you for being sort of like... at the beginning of the show being like, Ben, I'm not posh. And then being like, yeah, so... we actually went to go see Tibetan monks on tour.
But I live in the middle of nowhere. There's nothing to do. There's not a nightclub.
One of the big shows that I really like to get out to is my mum booked tickets
because it was that or stare at the telly for another night. And we were so bored of doing that we thought if we had another night of staring at the telly, we might just take our own thumbnails off with bottle openers. So we're like, do you know what?
No, I get it.
Let's go see a man play a thigh bone.
Yeah. Skip the cinema. Skip like a local bowling alley. Let's go to the local concert house, town hall, where the Tibetan thigh bone monks.
Have you seen a man play a human thigh bone? Have you seen a man play a human thigh bone?
No, I have. I guess you should go outside and play football or some shit. I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
How old were you when this was going on?
This was like 6 months ago.
Fucking hell.
Ben, you're aware culture doesn't just come in yogurt, right? You can go get some of your own. You're aware that, like...
That caught me so off guard. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. No, that's good.
Right. Right, okay.
Low-key.
Right, okay. So when I'm in Telford and there's an interesting thing to go on,
yeah.
If it's not sufficiently poor sounding, shall I just not invite you?
No, do it, because I need material to rib you about later on.
Okay, brilliant. Yeah, can't wait for that. Speaking of, do you want to come
and play dice in the alleyway? No, mate, I'm broke, okay? Stop trying to wash your culture over me.
Right, okay. Dice is a bit too posh for you, bud, let's be fair.
I've got some 20-sided die. That's about it, mate. That's where I'll talk about.
Oh, right, okay, but I'm the one that... Okay, fine. Speaking of culture, just briefly, I know this film wasn't for you. This, however, is for the Library of US Congress.
Nice.
Been selected as part of the National Film Registry as being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. But I don't think that's the sign of it having the cultural impact it had. I think the sign is Rob Reiner's story about going to a restaurant with Nora Ephron, And he say, Rob Reiner says, there's this restaurant in New York that John Gotti always comes to, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we went, and sure enough, in walks John Gotti with like six mafia gangster wise guys.
John Gotti is the drummer of Limp Bizkit, right?
No, John Gotti, the gangster from the mafia.
John Gotti, take us to the Matthews Bridge.
What? No.
All right.
I don't listen to your poor person
music. I'm going to send you a song after this. All right.
All right.
Three
cool.
Limp Bizkit fans have thoroughly enjoyed that little whip.
All of Limp Bizkit's UK fans have enjoyed that little whip.
And you are all welcome.
But anyway, John Gotti walks in and they finish the meal, and there's a man standing outside in a huge limo. Looks like Luca Brasi from The Godfather. He looks at me and goes, "You killed my father. Prepared to die."
Yes, sick. Now that's what you want to hear walking out.
Right, at which point I go, I really hope that he's quoting The Princess Bride. He goes, he goes, The Princess Bride, I love that movie. Rob Reiner says, I almost shit in my pants.
Fair.
Right. And then the weird quote is where he then goes on, when you penetrate guys like that, you know you've made it. And I think he needs to reconsider his word choice.
Yeah, to be fair.
Yeah.
To be fair, you penetrated my father. Now prepare to die. You know what I mean? It's the fist and fetish come back.
Do you want to play a game?
Yeah.
Right, so I've got a little link here to 290 The Princess Bride trivia questions.
290 of them?
Yeah.
Am I supposed to be clicking this link?
No, because I've picked five.
It's actually 290 questions.
It's actually 290 questions, yeah.
Dude, people just have time.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
Don't they just?
They just have time.
Maybe that can be your thing. Maybe you can write quizzes. Maybe you're like that as much as cocaine.
Barely. I barely managed to write my half of our quiz. And when I did, you were like, Ben, that's nonsense. No one's going to get these. So I had to rewrite them.
To be fair, you said the same about mine and we were both right.
No. A bunch of people got in the 60s out of the 80 questions. I'm well happy with that. There's so many. Legitimately, that's like over three quarters. Banging.
Fair. I was panicking. Right. During the sword fight between Wesley and Inigo.
True.
What deliberate blooper can be noticed about the terrain?
Is this multiple choice, or do I just have to pick out an piece of bit that might have been out of place?
There's a bit where they jump. They jump and they land, and what's interesting about the landing
is that it's soft ground, like pads.
Yeah, it's very clearly pads with dust on.
Yeah.
Quite deliberately. Okay. I'm going to give you that.
Okay.
Barely. In the fire swamp, Wesley tells Buttercup the secret of Dread Pirate Roberts. In that Dread Pirate Roberts is not one man. It's a lineage passed on. What was the name of the man Wesley inherited the ship from?
Dread Pirate Roberts.
Okay. Oh, I'm going to have to give you the point. But I was asking for his civilian name.
Oh. No clue.
It was Ryan.
Oh, okay.
Which then makes me think of Ryan from the US Office and the idea of him being the Dread Pirate Roberts.
I love that.
Who was originally considered for the role of Fezzik?
Okay, so it would have to be big people. So Danny DeVito, out of the question.
Yeah.
Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Correct. Yeah.
Is that it?
They wanted Andre the Giant first. And
yeah.
Then he said, oh, I can't do it. I've got my wrestling thing. I don't want to come do this small movie. Mm-hmm. Then they were like, oh, Arnold Schwarzenegger. But by the time the film got made, because this film was in production hell for years and years and years, it was considered a bit of a cursed picture. Like one studio exec picked it and then got fired the next day, and then it happened again. And it, you know, it
got picked up by a smaller company, and that company went bust over the weekend that they were about to sign the contract. So the company, by the Monday rolled around, the company didn't exist anymore.
Can you imagine doing that? Don't, because I'm currently
like
trying
three, four times.
I'm trying to sign a flat at the moment, and I've not actually got pen to paper yet, and I'm shitting it.
Oh, mate, you shit over the weirdest stuff.
Yeah.
The weirdest stuff.
Yeah, well, everything. Everything. It's just the stuff that I don't admit I'm shitting it about.
I know, honestly. Half of the time, it's like some of the stuff that you send me in text messages, and I'm like, you're now shitting my pants.
Right.
Calm it.
Medically, I can't, but thanks.
Yeah.
Vizzini.
Medically, I can't stop shitting your pants.
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant,
yeah,
thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah. Vizzini, the wise man, played by Wallace Andy. Who was originally cast for him?
Ooh. Is this the Miracle... No, the Wise Man or the Miracle Max guy?
So the three bandits that kidnap Buttercup, one's Inigo Montoya, one's Fezzik, and then Fezzik, there's a third one.
I'm not sure. I don't even know who could play that role.
Well, you've already mentioned him.
Danny DeVito. Fuck off. How was Danny DeVito not in this film?
He was very briefly considered because he is Sicilian and the character is Sicilian, and he was very briefly considered.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the man who did get the role and played it is, as far as I'm concerned, perfectly.
Hell yeah, perfectly.
Found out that they had wanted Danny DeVito.
Oh.
Rather than like being like, oh, okay, well, they thought about that guy and then cast me instead. He was convinced that the only reason he got the job is because Danny DeVito wasn't free that week.
Oh, no.
And for years afterwards was convinced that he'd done a terrible job.
That's brutal. That's actually brutal.
Cary Elwes talks about him like sweating the entire time and him being like, wow, he's really into this. No. In later interviews, he's like, I was just convinced I was going to be fired at any second. I had no idea why they wanted me.
That's an awful way to work on it. Such a fun film. Right, literally being like, I'm about to get fired. Like, I'm on my way out.
Every time you see two people laugh, you're like, that's about me.
Jesus. Yeah, that's fucked up. Jesus Christ.
And then last but not least, the two rival kingdoms in the movie are Florin and...
I don't know, some of the fairy tale bullshit fucking... I don't know. No clue.
It's Gilda, and the joke there is that the Florin and the Gilda are both the same amount of money in the Dutch currency. So like we've got a quid or a pound.
Knee slap.
That's the same with Florin and Gilda, meaning that they are both interchangeable. It doesn't matter what one is which. They're the same place. No.
Yeah, definitely. I love jokes where I have to understand Dutch currency to get them. Oh,
down for some ignorance this week, okay, Ben? You're just like, I'm just going to roll around in not wanting to care about anything.
Oh, mate.
Do you know what it is? You're in fuck it mode. That's what it is.
That's all it is. It's just fuck. I watched it and was like, fuck it. I got a couple laughs in this film, though. There was a couple in there.
Oh, how gracious.
There's one bit
Let's suck them from your tea. Oh, Ben, you laughed at the movie a few times. Tell me so I can be grateful for them.
A couple.
Right, okay.
There's one bit where she throws Wesley down a hill and he rolls forever. And then she realizes it's Wesley. And then rather than just walk down the hill or go down to go get him, she throws herself down the hill and does the exact same thing.
It's mint.
I thought that was funny because I was like, that kind of tracks. That's something. Right. In my brain, it made perfect sense. Right. And then as they were falling, I was like, this is stupid. and what was there was another bit. I think it was inconceivable. I don't think that word means what you think it means.
And the we were talking earlier, and you said, "Okay, let me catch you up to what's happened." No, too long. Let me sum it up.
Oh yeah, dude, that guy's a fucking legend.
Right,
I love Inigo, whatever his name is, Inigo Montoya.
Right,
Inigo Montoya, prepare to die. He might be my spirit animal.
Nice,
he's amazing.
Right, just as long as you never have to, you know, learn like sword fighting or anything. Or Dutch currencies.
No, I could commit myself to summit.
Okay.
For 2 decades.
Yeah.
I mean, I pretty much did. I smoked for 2 decades. There you go. I'm just the best at cigarettes.
I love the idea that at some point you're going to sit down with a man who killed your father and try and outsmoke him.
Dude, if someone ever killed my father, I'd buy him a fucking cake. Are you taking the piss? I'm trying to track down a man with 6 fingers. Why he killed my dad? Oh, God, are you going to fight him? Nah. Got a fresh fucking Vicky sponge for him, mate.
That sadly is all the time we've got this week. Oh, wait, no. We're talking nonsense. What are you rating it, Ben?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Two ratings. I'm going to do the rating of...
That's not how it works.
No, I'm going to do the rating of the film itself. So sort of like on a filmmaking level, technicality level, writing, directing, all this stuff. It's a fat 10. It's a banging film. It's incredible, family friendly, very soft, very delicate film.
Mm-hmm.
Full of nostalgia, I can imagine. fat 10.
Okay.
It's amazing. On my enjoyment level,
two.
Six.
Oh.
Six.
Okay.
I give it a 6. It's on the right side. It's just not far on the right side. I'd give it a solid 6.
I'd have let you get away with a 1. Like,
No. Inigo Montoya, man. Inigo Montoya on his own
right.
is a 5. And then everything with everything else.
Andre
like
the Giant.
Andre the Giant, the nice little grandfather stuff. The, you know what I mean? Yeah. I'll go 6. How about you?
It's a fat 10, man. There is... Yeah. I do have the nostalgia, and there is something about this film. I don't watch it often, but every time I do, I'm reminded of... I've just watched A League of Their Own, which I'd not seen before.
Yeah. Great film, right?
It's good. It's really, really good. Again, I don't have the nostalgia for it.
Okay.
But there was something about the way it was written, and that it's a style of movie that you just doesn't get made anymore.
Just doesn't.
It's A League of Their Own is 1992 crystallized right into every filmmaking cliche. You know exactly what's going to happen. You know exactly how it's going to happen, and you just love it because it's dripping with charm.
The only difference is Madonna's actually good in that film,
right? For once,
yeah. Mad
with this film, it transcends the level of charm that it has because the charm for me is sort of endless. And it becomes a really interesting sort of analysis of the things we took for granted about fairy stories. The fact that Wesley, when he's the man in black, is climbing up the cliffs of insanity, and Inigo Montoya and he have a chat just before they have their duel to the death. And Inigo hands him the sword that he's intending to kill him with. But there's that mutual understanding that neither of them will double cross the other because inherently and subconsciously, they are both good guys. And they know that another good guy wouldn't do that to another good guy because it breaks the unwritten rule. And so that kind of clever playing with storytelling archetypes, I think, is a far cleverer thing than a Monty Python, let's just take this down and go, oh, isn't this stupid? It respects the genre whilst enjoying the genre and whilst pointing out everything that makes the genre sort of not true to life whilst making us desperately appreciate all the reasons it's not true to life. What a wonderful world that you can have where there are good guys and bad guys and the bad guys get punished and the good guys win and true love is stronger than death. Ah, lovely.
It is lovely. Humor is very similar to Monty Python. Just going to put that one in there. Just as like my last little.
You're such a grumpy boy this week, Ben. You're such a little grumpy boy. And I'm like, I just like this. Tired. And you're like, you're a cuck.
Yeah, you have a fisting fetish. This is what it is. You just want to shake Andre the Giant's hand, disappear into him.
That's Christopher Guest.
Yeah.
Such a grumpus wumpus.
Guys, thank you so much for hanging out with us. It's been an absolute pleasure. Sorry I've been a pouty boy, but also, fuck it. No, I mean.
So pouty.
No, I mean. We love and appreciate each and every one of you. If you want to help support the show, you can leave us a review on wherever you listen to us right now, or just tell a friend about us. Dude, the word of mouth is insane.
It really is.
Leave a review. I'll read it out next week.
Yeah. Probably.
Maybe, if I remember.
We've still got a whole lot of unpublished Spotify ones we need to go through at some point.
Yeah.
If you want more show, more content, and an extra episode as and when we manage to get to it, you can support us over on Patreon for as low as £1 a month. It is... We've got playlists of film soundtracks on there. We've got videos. We've got a whole bunch of stuff. It's a party. Yeah. Come join.
Extra episodes. Everything.
Yeah.
We love you. Don't ever forget it. You are the light of my life.
Oh, Ben.
I'm trying. Rob, I love you. I really do.
I love you too, babe.
Consume stuff, bud.
Okay, we're not doing the bit before it. Fine.
What's the bit before it?
Consume.
Wait, what's the bit before it? All right, so the moral of the week is the lesson takeaway from The Princess Bride is... If someone kills your father, fencing is probably not the best way to go about revenge.